What does it mean to be Australian in 2019?
Crikey! Standing up for a fair go.
The clichés about our identity get rolled out every Australia Day. Being true blue means believing in a fair go, mateship and Vegemite. But in recent times, what, and more importantly, who, counts as Australian has been hijacked by far-right fringe groups with a view to exclusion. Suddenly Aussie pride is not as simple as we'd like to think.
We're being basically, I think, bred out of existence as Australians, as white Australian people. I think everyone here knows that.
Our story is complicated. We're home to one of the oldest civilizations on Earth, yet one in four Australians were born overseas. Some argue Australia Day should not be celebrated on January 26, the day of the arrival of the First Fleet, or Invasion Day, as some in the Indigenous community call it.
That was the day that Australia's course changed forever. It was 60,000 years of Indigenous history before that, and modern Australia effectively started on that day. You can't change that. That's just what happened. That's just a fact.
So what do we stand for? How do we redefine what it means to be a proud Australian? Can you be patriotic and self-aware at the same time? From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire.
And I want Australia Day to be even more so a day where all Australians can come together. You don't have to bring one day down to acknowledge other things happening in the country. And so I am open to a chat with the Australian people about how we can better acknowledge Indigenous Australians and our Indigenous peoples.
So joining us today is ABC journalist Dan Grant, whose new book Australia Day is coming out in April, and the editor of the Sydney Morning Herald, Lisa Davies. Thank you both for joining me.
Hi, Tori.
Good to be here.
And after this conversation, you'll hear a chat I had with the 2018 Australian of the Year, Professor Michelle Simmons, about what it was like choosing to become Australian in her 30s. Michelle's optimism is quite infectious. But I want to start with you, Stan and Lisa, on the personal front. I know what makes me feel like an Australian. I think it's the fact that I have never known anything else. I've never questioned it. I was born Australian. I was raised to be to know that that made me incredibly lucky. And I've always been proud of that. And I think that it's connected to both the environment and the culture. Nothing makes me feel more Australian than throwing myself under a wave at Bondi or being under the sky, you know, west of the Great Dividing Range. But for me, I think the big defining feature, I know I am in Australia and I feel Australian when I feel completely free. That's the thing that defines it for me.
It's a lovely way to say it.
What about you, Stan? What makes you feel like an Australian?
I wish I could say that I was Australian and never had to think about it, but I've always had to think about it. One of my favourite poets, one of my favourite writers is Czesław Miłosz, who was a Polish Nobel laureate who was also a Lithuanian. And anyone who knows the history of Lithuania knows that it had been a country that had been dominated and controlled and occupied by others. And he once made this comment. He said, "Perhaps I'm a Lithuanian for whom it's not meant to be a Lithuanian." And sometimes I've had that same feeling in Australia. Perhaps I'm an Australian for whom it's not meant to be an Australian. What do I mean by that is that, you know, I was born into a people broadly defined as Aboriginal or Indigenous, for whom that question of what it is to belong was always a vexed one. Our belonging here, our citizenship, was something that was contested or contingent. It was something that was fought over. It was something we were excluded from. It was a history of segregation. The idea of embracing what it is to be Australian is a very troubling one. And yet, it is the single most important question to me. If I cannot be an Australian, I can't be anything, because I could not be born anywhere else. I am part of a people who have been here for at least 60,000 years. And my ancestors came clad in irons as convicts from Ireland. What happened in this country has made me. So I feel that dissonance. And I feel, in a personal sense, that conflict that is then mirrored more broadly in our nation.
And so when you were a child, how did you feel about being an Australian? Did you feel like a capital A Australian?
No, I didn't. I didn't. In fact, I have a memory of this. It was always on my mind, always on my mind. From a very young age, there was an awareness that we were different. We were the outsiders. We were the fringe dwellers. We were extraordinarily poor. We were effectively homeless. My mother and father made a decision that we would not be living on Aboriginal missions and controlled by the state. There was a fear of taking us away, the welfare authorities taking children away. It had happened to other people in our family. And we were on the move constantly. So I had that sense of dislocation, of not belonging, of not having a home, of being on the outside looking in, of being a fringe dweller, knowing that we were incredibly poverty-stricken, but we were also black. We were also Aboriginal. We were the blacks. And I remember once at a very young age, it would have been about 5 or 6, and it's one of those childhood memories that is just so indelible that it has never left me. And I was standing in the quadrangle at school, and in the late 1960s, they used to do this thing where you had to recite the oath. I honour my queen, I serve my God, I salute the flag, something like that. And I remember at the time thinking, no, this is not me. And going home to my grandfather and saying, I don't feel like doing this. And he said, that's all right, just put your fingers behind your back and cross them.
Right.
And you won't mean it. So, look, I was always aware. And my journey, I think, has been to reach a point where I can hold all of those things, all of those contradictions at the same time. I'm Australian and incredibly proud of it. It's a remarkable country, and I've been to some of the worst countries in the world as a reporter. This is a remarkable country, and yet I'm also part of the people for whom the greatness of this country was extracted from our suffering.
Mm.
So those two things I hold in common, and that's what makes me an Australian. It is that dissonance,
yeah.
It is that contradiction that makes me an Australian.
Lisa, that travel, you've done a lot of travel.
Mm.
It has a powerful effect on defining your Australianness, doesn't it? When you come home.
Oh, absolutely. I still think that one of my favourite things ever is leaving the country, but then being able to fly in over Sydney and seeing this, you know, beautiful, stunning harbour city that I love, and I've lived here for a long time. And I mean, I grew up, I was actually not born in Australia. I'm the eldest of two, but my brother was born here, but I was actually born in the Philippines to British parents.
I did not know that.
Yes, they were just living there for a short time. It wasn't, you know, through my father's work, but I've lived in lots of parts of Australia, and I think that while I have a British passport and I, you know, have some connection to the UK, I think what I identify with as being Australian is that this is my choice. Like, this is my, I feel a sense of belonging here, and always have. And I guess that, you know, a lot of travel as a child, moving around both Australia and internationally, I feel just very incredibly connected to this place. And I think it's something that is one of those defining features for people who love Australia, is just their sense of belonging to it somehow.
I love how you both describe the landscape and how that makes you feel Australian, because there is no other landscape like it.
No.
You know, Carl Jung, the psychologist, once said that land assimilates the conqueror.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you go to a place and you try to subdue the place,
mm.
and yet the land takes hold of you. And I think that's been part of my journey, in a sense, is recognising that this is not just a black country, although, you know, traditionally, historically, and in terms of longevity, we have a great claim on it. But the bones of all of my ancestors are buried here, black and white. And I think it's that relationship to the land that is probably the thing that we hold most in common. And yet at the same time, it is the issue that is unresolved in Australia that lies at the heart of what Aboriginal people called unfinished business, you know, terra nullius, the idea that this land was empty and belonging to no one. I think terra nullius was not just a legal doctrine. I think it was a psychology.
Yeah.
I think it seeped into the way that we see the land.
Which is such a shame, because the things about our environment that most people, that sets their hearts on fire, it's the parts of the land that no one can own.
Mm.
No one can own the waves in the Pacific
Ocean.
Can't.
No.
Or own the sky in the outback.
Yeah.
Or the desert.
Yeah.
No, I think You know, I that's the fear. You know, you talk to farmers and sixth generation farming families, and they have a relationship to this land that is very similar to what I find with my, you know, my own family, Aboriginal family. And I think in that sense, we all become Indigenous to the land. And I don't mean that in the way that, you know, culturally I'm an Indigenous person, but in our relationship to it. And I think that's why that question of terra nullius, that sense of emptiness, that unresolved question of the settlement of Australia is the thing that haunts us still, because we know that we can't feel a part of this place until we have resolved that issue. And we've never really resolved it.
So now we've talked about the personal, I want to ask both of you whether you think it is possible to actually sum up what it is to be Australian. Like, is there an Australian psyche, an Australianness, or is it too complicated? Is that what makes us Australian, that we're so complicated?
I kind of enjoy the idea that, of course, there are a set of basic, you know, values, principles that I think most successful nations would like to claim, you know, respect for one another, you know, the freedom that we enjoy, you know, our democracy, you know, there are so many, like, empowerment of our people, our ability to be aspirational, to want the best for each other in the world. All of those things I think are sort of pretty basic and obvious. So what happens after that to me is kind of the uniqueness that we have. I mean, yes, we, you know, we have an incredibly proud you know, Indigenous culture that should be celebrated. We have an incredible international multicultural society here. I mean, we are the most successful multicultural nation in the world. And then we have, you know, the beauty of all of that together. Somehow we need to find a way through to bring it all together, to sort of jointly identify that whilst we have a lot of similar things, the difference is actually what also should be celebrated, I think.
There's a lovely line, the opening line to Tourmaline, the book that Randolph Stowe wrote, one of the great books of Australia. And the first line is, "I say we have a bitter heritage, but that's not to run it down."
Mm.
I don't think I've read anything that sums up this country more.
Yes,
we have a bitter heritage, but it's who we are. Mm. I remember saying to someone overseas once, they asked me that question, you know, what is an Australian? What is it to be an Australian? And I said, in Australia, we never let our bigotry get in the way of our friendships. and it's a weird thing. We can be incredibly racist. There can be deep bigotry in Australia. And yet our friendships cut across that. Mm. You know, you'll often hear someone say, "Oh, so and so, you know, oh yeah, he might be this, he might be that, but he's not a bad bloke."
Yeah.
You know. And I think that laconic aspect to our nature is something that is unique. Americans can't say that. Mm. They are so conscious all the time of those things that it gets in the way of their friendships, and there's a lack of sincerity. I've always found a deep sincerity in Australia at a personal level beyond what our politics may be. Mm. And I think that's a really unique thing here.
So we now have a very, very small section of our society sort of almost hijacking patriotism. You know, if you're a real Aussie, you're going to put an Australian flag around your neck and go and
light up a barbie. And
yeah, and, you know, and tell people that they're not welcome here, and that's how you be a real Aussie. That's a terrible shame. How do you think we can wrestle back Australian pride into a more nuanced and self-aware conversation where you can put your hand up and say, you know what, I am a proud Australian, I'm proud of this country, but I also acknowledge its flaws, and I acknowledge that there are people in this country who are not as lucky as I am or as you are, and sort of be able to be proud without being sort of embarrassed at the same time?
Well, I think it's about having, we need to have an adult conversation about our history and about where we're going, and I think that conversation needs to happen sooner rather than later. I feel like there's some momentum for it at the moment. We don't have to be, we certainly should not be proud of what happened, you know, 200 and whatever years ago. We should certainly,
and
in the many years since, of course. But we also need to somehow address it in such a way that acknowledges the hurt and suffering, but also that we want that to stop and that we need to move forward past that. To me, I think the time has come for us to stop having debates about, you know, what's right or wrong. I think everyone should agree that many things that happened were incredibly wrong and damaging, but we also now need to come together and move forward.
You know, it's a strange thing, isn't it? I think it's a very modern idea, this sort of Australian patriotism and jingoism. I thought the whole idea of tying a flag around you and being overtly patriotic was deeply un-Australian. I think we've always had a much more relaxed idea of who we are. I don't remember as a boy growing up that the flag and those symbols of what it is to be patriotic were particularly prevalent.
You know, and certainly Australia Day is a very modern phenomenon.
Yeah, well, it is, in fact. But the jingoism, I think, is a bit of a confection. But I look at the day itself and, you know, on all sides, I'm someone who feels very wary of overt positions or overt displays about anything. So I wouldn't be one to tie the flag around me or paint my face and go down to, you know, and good luck to people that want to do that. Similarly, I wouldn't necessarily be someone, you know, carrying the Aboriginal flag and yelling in someone's face. It's not me. On that day, I feel it's a much more reflective day to me. I am immensely proud and lucky to have been born here, but I know that the great price has been paid here as well. So that's how I see the day. And I think that sort of overt display of either anger or sort of patriotism is on the fringes. I think for most people in Australia, they sort of walk through the day in a very casual way.
So do you think maybe we should change the rhetoric from Australia Day being a day of celebration to a day of reflection?
I do.
And of the good and the bad.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, we should actually look at it in a reflective way, but also to kind of acknowledge how far we have come as well, and acknowledging, I mean, in the same way that I think we, you know, on Anzac Day and, you know, we think about the suffering, we have a celebration that we were part of, a war that, you know, we lost hundreds and thousands of people, but we also were a part of something to defeat evil. In that similar way of like celebration and reflection, I think it would be a really, we just need to incorporate much more of that and look at what we can do to incorporate the Indigenous culture more in that day, and more as understanding where they want it, we all should take these ideas.
Stan, do you think it should be on January 26th?
Look, I've pondered this question, been asked this question a lot, and without trying to squib it, because I do have a view on it, which I will tell you, but I think it's the wrong question. I don't think moving the day or gestures are what we should be talking about. I think it's a day to ask, who are we? We as a people, as a nation. What is it to belong to a nation? What do we remember and what do we forget? You know, Ernest Renan, the French historian, said that nations are built as much on what you forget as what you remember. If you're going to cling to unending resentment and grievance, then you're never going to have a reconciliation. It becomes poisonous. But similarly, Australia cannot be blind to the history of what has happened here either. So I think I'm much more interested in the question about, who are we? What does it mean to be an Australian? If at some point in the discussion, the debate, that Australians decided that we need to move the date, I'd be all for it.
Right.
But I think right now the day for me holds all of our contradictions. There is never a better time to speak and reflect on what's happened to one side of my family, as there is to also celebrate the fact that I am part of white and black, and that there are remarkable things about this country as well. January 26 is a unique day to be able to have that conversation. No other day exists right now.
Because it was the turning point.
And to move it as a gesture wouldn't answer those questions. I fear it'd be hijacked by some people as a reclaim the day movement. Some have put forward another idea that maybe we have a commemoration or something on the 25th, and then on the 26th have Australia Day. And there's a poignancy to that, but it doesn't appeal to me. January 26 is a day that is foundational to the idea of modern Australia. And I am a product of 26. I'm not a product of 25. I came on the ship and I was standing on the shore. And I think it's that space between the ship and the shore that makes me an Australian. And if we move the date at some point as a nation, we decide to do that, we do that because it is good for this nation. And we as a nation have decided to do that, not because it's a response to something or because, you know, some people don't like it or some people. It's not about that. It's about who are we as a nation. If we frame it that way, it becomes a different conversation to one that pits one group of people against another.
And I think if everyone spent a minute, every adult Australian, every teenage Australian spent 1 minute this Australia Day putting themselves in the shoes of an Indigenous person, not having to necessarily agree with their perspective, not having to have a view, but to just think about it and think about how their lives are different, you know, how their own lives are different to that person's, then just that slight difference of perspective might actually give people some food for thought to think, okay, I'm not the only one having this moment, having this time. This is our day and for all of us to share. So how do we best do that?
So as senior journalists, someone who runs a very important newspaper and someone who has a big platform on the public broadcaster, do you feel a responsibility to sort of help define this debate and help define Australianness, or do you whose responsibility is it to come up with the answer to this question?
It's become, and I think going away, it was really interesting what you had to say before about living overseas, Lita, but when I went overseas, you know, I lived overseas for, you know, more than half of my working life, and 18 years in London and Hong Kong and Beijing and the Middle East, and have reported from almost 80 countries. And going overseas was a liberation initially for me. I was free of this idea of Australia. I was free of the history that hung so heavily, you know, over me. But I also became an Australian overseas. People asked me.
It crystallises, doesn't it?
I met other Australians, and I found that we are a people, and we are different, and we are unique. And I grew to appreciate the things that perhaps I couldn't appreciate with the background that I'd had and the life that I'd lived here and the history that my family had endured. So it's become the most important thing in the world to me to explain these things, to help to define these things. And I don't say this in a sort of, you know, too high-minded way, but trying to understand this country is trying to understand myself and the writing that I do and how I think about this country is probably the most important thing that I do right now. Writing, thinking, trying to put myself in that position between the ship and the shore and to understand what it is to belong to Australia. Our literature, our music, our art, it is so unique. Our films, it is so unique, and they go to the idea of the Australian soul. And I do think it's a, I feel a deep sense of responsibility to be able to do that from the vantage point of someone who really straddles, I think, two worlds in this country.
And what about you, Lisa?
So I think, I mean, the Sydney Morning Herald's been around for a long time, and these issues have been part of public consciousness for a long time. I do feel a sense of responsibility that we need to lead a very mature debate. And I think it's important to hear from all sides in this conversation and challenge people's, you know, quite ingrained thinking, I suppose, around a lot of issues from all sides of the political spectrum, from all sort of communities. Should we as the Herald be, you know, expressing a view at some point? Yes. But again, that needs to be considered. And I just think, you know, it's interesting. There does seem to be, I don't know why, and I'm not quite sure why it's in 2019, but I've got this sense that we're kind of ready for that conversation now. I don't know if it's because, I mean, I've been in my discussions with people thinking about, are we looking for this sense of identity because of the world in which we now live? We've got, you know, tumultuous times in, you know, some of our biggest, you know, partners, you know, in the United States, in the UK. There's fracturing of societies all over the place. Are we now in a position to properly embrace our own history and identity to move forward? I don't know.
I think you've hit on something really important, Lisa, and that is that, you know, we are reflective of something that's happening much more broadly in our world now. You know, the sort of post-Cold War consensus of universalism and cosmopolitanism is really being tested by a resurgence of nationalism. You know, the Brexit vote reflects that. Donald Trump campaigned on that. Viktor Orban in Hungary has been incredibly successful at putting up the borders again and tapping into that sense of resentment about Hungarian history. You know, Erdogan in Turkey bangs the same drum as Putin does. And I think the rise of China has really destabilized the world and the West, more broadly speaking, idea of itself and its sense of its place in the world. There is an alternative now that does not represent liberal democracy. And the way that nations react to this is really defining the politics of our times, populism, sectarianism, tribalism.
And our continuing disapproval in our political system. You know, we see poll after poll of people who are just...
Don't even believe in democracy anymore.
They don't believe in the politicians doing what they should be doing. And so we're looking for that leadership and inspiration elsewhere. And I don't know. I think this could be an interesting year.
I think you're right. And I remember giving I gave the Hawke lecture... last year now, it's 2019, and in Adelaide. And I made the point that at a time when democracy is under threat, when the principles of liberalism are being challenged around the world, we had in Australia a moment with the Uluru Statement from the Heart, from a group of people for whom democracy was designed to exclude them. They were never included in the idea, the foundational ideas of Australian democracy. And here were Aboriginal people saying, we want in. Not out. We want to put that our aspirations are best met within the Australian Constitution, that within the framework of Australian liberal democracy, Aboriginal ambitions and aspirations can be met. And I think that was a moment lost because it did go to that idea of that you're raising. What is it to be an Australian? What is unique about us at a time when the questions of liberal democracy are really prevalent all around the world? And we had an opportunity where a people who had travelled the farthest distance and carried the biggest burden were saying to Australia, we want in. And it was a moment lost.
And I'm very hopeful that that response to that statement from the heart can actually begin properly in a you know, perhaps if there is a change in government, perhaps if there's, even if there's not, we really need to address that was a letter to the Australian people that was never responded to.
Look, I feel like we could talk about this for hours.
Yes.
So it's a conversation that is really important and has to keep going. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I hope you have a reflective and enjoyable Australia Day.
I will. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Tori.
Hi, John Sylvester here. I'm the senior crime reporter for The Age. I've been a crime reporter in Melbourne for 40 years, covering gangland wars, outlaw bikies, police corruption, and the underworld of this city. And I've seen a lot of changes in the news business. But take it from me, I believe this newspaper is now filled with the best young news gatherers in decades. Our investigative unit is without doubt the best in The Age's history. This mob produces massive revelations nearly every week, and they're doing stories no one else will touch. And in the era of so-called fake news, we need mainstream media more than ever before. Subscribe to The Age. Support news you can trust.
Wow. This is an amazing moment. You know, I came to Australia because I believed it would allow me to realise my dreams. I was warmly welcomed and have found that both the research and business communities have backed me. Together, we've done some amazing things, and I pinch myself every day.
Quantum physicist Michelle Simmons came to Australia in 1999 and last year was named Australian of the Year for her work in developing a new type of computer. Her work has been lauded, as has her encouragement of girls in science. Thanks for joining us, Michelle.
It's a pleasure.
I'm going to start with a curly one. What does it mean to be Australian?
Look, there's so many terrific traits about being Australian. But I've been thinking about hard over the last year because I've been wandering around the country meeting various people. And I think for me, fundamentally, it's being open-minded, hardworking, telling it as it is, and not taking ourselves too seriously.
Right. That is a good list. I think the Prime Minister would probably agree with that list too. I think most of us would. You made the choice to be Australian. And I think that's really interesting because as someone who was born here and grew up here and had no choice in it, I've always understood how lucky I am to be born in this country and to be an Australian, and also understood, like, being proud of it. You were in your late 30s when you became an Australian, I think.
Yeah, probably my early 30s, yeah.
What was the defining factor that made you decide, not only am I going to live in this country, but I'm going to become an Australian?
Yeah, look, I have to admit, so I grew up in the UK, and I remember when I was choosing where am I going to go in life, and I was looking at the US and I was looking at Australia. I had family in Australia, so I'd been here once before. And I remember thinking it's very free-spirited and, you know, it's egalitarian. And so when I was making my choice of careers, it was an obvious choice to come here. But then when I got here, just the opportunities available to young people in Australia were amazing. So I was able to build, you know, a very kind of significant research team here, get access to funding and leadership at an early age, which, you know, was great. There wasn't a huge amount of hierarchy of people telling me things couldn't be done.
Right.
And so just that freedom of spirit, academic freedom, freedom of spirit, willing to give things a go that are ambitious, it was really a no-brainer for me to become Australian. Then obviously I fell in love.
Yeah, that helps.
And that helps. And I've now got 3 young children. And so just,
and they're,
you know,
Australian.
And they're all Australian. So, you know, it's my life really opened up coming over here. And I still, you know, firmly believe that Australia is the best place in the world to do research.
Right. It's a big decision, isn't it, to leave your country of birth permanently?
I think it is.
But 1 in 4 Australians now were born overseas.
Yeah. So it doesn't, I mean, to be honest, most people that come and visit me, even researchers across the world, they all want to stay.
Right.
And you realise that it's that, you know, it's just the friendly, collaborative spirit, but yeah, also very competitive. Mm. You know, Australians really like to give it a go.
Yeah.
And that just that whole culture is fantastic.
So having said that, we're not perfect. When I think about what it means to be Australian, I think being free is probably the most powerful of the words I can think of to describe it. Yeah. But do you think it's possible to be proud of Australia and be proud to be Australian while also acknowledging that we're not perfect and that we have a history that is still got generational problems for us and that our society is not perfect?
I think you meant any society is not perfect, Jan. I think it's something every country tries to strive for. But I think if you look at the mix of things that Australia has, it's in a better position than most, yeah. And so if you look across the world, you know, a lot of countries have been going for generations and generations. Australia's new, and in that way, it's, you know, it's tried to bring in people from all across the world to help grow it as a country, and I think it's done pretty well. You know, if you compare us to everybody else internationally, I'd say Australia is one of the ideal places to grow, but there's always going to be challenges. Yeah? You can never get it right. It's always going to swing both, you know, positive and negative.
You seem quite optimistic because we like to think of ourselves as being, you know, have a go and plain spoken and all those things that you mentioned. Yeah. But then I think there's a whole other debate going on off to the side where that is more negative about Australia and where we are at the moment, about us not being as innovative as we should be, about us falling behind on international standards of education and skills. Like there's sort of 2 conversations about how Australia is travelling. Yeah. You seem to be in the very optimistic one.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you say to the people who look at us and go, well, actually, it's not as great as you all say, and this sort of great Australian dream that you're talking about doesn't really exist?
Yeah, look, I think for everyone, it comes from their own personal perspective and the experiences they've had. Yeah, so I'm very lucky because it's been positive all the way through. You know, and I guess so. It's hard for me to see Australia in any other way. You know, there's always the view that somewhere else is better, the grass is greener somewhere else. But actually, if it is intrinsically good here, and you want to build a culture of innovation here and get people out building companies here, then you should start talking more about that positive rhetoric because it will help young people engage more. Yeah.
Right. But we've got some work to do, haven't we? I mean, you've been campaigning a lot this year on kids getting involved in STEM.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I can see things. Again, I can see areas where Australia is doing really well. It's got this kind of reticence about setting up companies. And again, it's that spirit of it's ambitious, but then it gets it doubts itself at certain points. And that's kind of, for me, not growing up here, that's really weird to see. So all this open, free-spirited stuff. But then when it gets to the really end of, you know, building industries, there's suddenly a change in viewpoints, and that's been quite surprising for me. In terms of things like education and coding, I honestly believe that coding should be compulsory in schools. I think it's a skill set that all young people are going to need. And again, Australia's in a position where it could lead that, but it's kind of hanging back and waiting to see what the rest of the world does. And so there are these funny little quirks every now and again that I come across where there seems to be a choice of going slightly more ambitious in areas where I would expect them to go, but they hold back. And that's something I haven't really fully understood.
So we've been so lucky as a country and as a people. Yeah. Maybe we need to be a bit smarter.
Well, it's a bit smarter. It's more believing in yourself.
Right.
There's some part of Australians that just don't quite believe that they can take it all the way.
Right.
It's not universal. It's just in certain areas. And certainly that translation to industries here, the education system. For me, very clearly at the moment, if you do want to make coding compulsory, obviously the teachers need to be trained and there's no mechanism to do that.
Yeah.
And so there's like a fundamental mechanistic thing that can be addressed.
Yeah.
But then we end up in this lots of debate and rhetoric instead of dealing with the issue. And that's, again, an area where I just expect Australians to get in there and sort it out.
Yeah. So maybe if we could add to, you know, if we are hardworking and plain-spoken and laid back and inclusive, maybe we need to add competitive to that mindset.
Yeah, well, so that's what, again, so from my experience in the research space, we're highly competitive, you know, we take it very seriously. Mm. I certainly think across huge numbers of research areas in Australia, we lead. And I guess that's, it's not the Australians are not used to celebrating and talking about that, you know, and they kind of get a cultural cringe about saying how good they are. And so at some points, you know, that's obviously, you know, kind of endearing.
Yeah.
But in other ways, when you've got to push, You've got to get that competitive spirit and be aggressive at the point where you need to be. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And so in sports, we do that in abundance, yeah. Mm. In some areas, we kind of hold back, and I haven't quite understood that.
Did you, when you became a citizen, did you go to a citizenship ceremony?
I did, yeah.
Can you tell me about it?
Oh, yeah. So I remember it very fondly because I went along and they have Lamingtons. And so I don't know if you've been to them. You have to obviously pass a test to get through.
And did you have any trouble passing the test?
No. They sing the national anthem, but then they give you a plant. And so, you know, so I have very warm memories of that day.
Yeah.
You know, and I've since been to a citizenship ceremony and I've got to see it from the other side. So I gave a speech at one and I got to see just how excited people are to become Australian. And it's, you know, it's a great thing to do.
Yeah. Was yours on Australia Day?
No. I can't actually remember. It's in October, I think it was.
So what do you think about Australia Day?
Look, personally, again, I think it's a fantastic day. So I recognise it's a point in Australia's history where everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of history. So I, you know, believe that cultures evolve across, you know, millions of years. And so, and various points in that history, significant things happen. So obviously there's, you know, people that see that as a good and a bad day, but fundamentally it did change the way Australia is. And so for me, that day is about celebrating being Australian. And, you know, because I chose to be Australian, I feel it very deeply. Mm. And I, like I say, for our young people, it's good to think about the positives of the nation and reinforce those so that people have a sense of, you know, good spirit about where they were born.
Do you think that it's possible for Australia Day to be a celebration as well as an acknowledgement that for a lot of Australians, you know, they don't see it as a celebration?
Yeah. Look, I think it has to be. I mean, I think, you know, people are trying to make it really inclusive. But it is. I mean, it's a mixed feeling day for different people, yeah. But fundamentally, it's a celebration of Australia, bringing together all those different cultures. So.
And do you think it should stay on January 26th?
So my view is yes, I do, because it's like, yeah, it's, you know, my birthday is actually 14th of July, which is Bastille Day in France.
Right.
And of course, Bastille Day, you know, again, people have very mixed views about that. A lot of people died, but it changed the way that France is as a nation, yeah. And so, you know, you can't rewrite history as it is. Mm. And those days do change things. And so I think it's a recognition of the fact that it's changed. But if people can, you know, somehow celebrate all aspects of that together, that's the ideal, and obviously that's very difficult to do.
All right, Michelle, thanks so much for joining me.
No, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks to Stan Grant, Lisa Davies and Michelle Simmons for joining Please Explain. If you know someone who would enjoy this week's episode, make sure you share it with them, or better yet, grab their phones and get them subscribed to get new episodes every week. Please Explain is brought to you by the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. Support the work we do. You can find the link to sign up in our show notes, or just pop subscribe Sydney Morning Herald or The Age into your search engine. This episode was produced and edited by Nicole Priestell and Rachel Dexter. Technical assistance from David McMillan, and Tom McKendrick is our head of audio. And special thanks to Amelia Maguire for keeping the show on the road this week. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.